I went in this really dark room with a plastic roof. There was tables set up with drugs on it and tables set up with money on it. I was like, this is just like a movie. And I was like, this is either going to go really good or really bad, you know?
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, you are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so this is episode 34 of the Leadersmith podcast. I am back with Brian Miller. Brian was on in the last episode talking about his work in Colombia, ministering to street kids, refugees. He's telling us about his story, but we ran out of time. So here, Brian, I want to welcome you back to the show.
Good. Hey, how you doing today?
Okay. So, Brian, could you briefly recap what you do in your ministry if anybody didn't listen to the last episode?
Okay. So, in a nutshell, what we're doing, the Lord gave me a vision 20-some years ago to reach out to street children in Medellin, Colombia. And I've been living here full-time for over 17 years. And 5 years ago, God gave me another strategy to be able to reach out to the middle-upper-class people in Colombia so that they would reach out to the least of these. And so, we started 5 years ago at church to the middle upper class. And then we started reaching out to the least of these. We started going to local schools and reaching out to really poor schools and teaching them English and Bible, what do you say, biblical values. And then as the church continued to grow, then we got more resources to start reaching out to the street people. And so then we started going out at night feeding girls that were waiting for their clients. We started giving them cheese sticks and hot tea. And telling them about the Lord, trying to build relationships.
Girls and clients, you're talking about prostitution. So just for people that didn't hear this yesterday, understand what we're talking about. Okay, go ahead.
The prostitutions. And then as well as we started a seminary here, trying to reach out to Christian leaders in Medellin. And so, and just this past November, we opened up a girls' home, a crisis pregnancy center for girls that were pregnant living on the streets. So that's what we've been working really hard on.
All of this is in the context of right now you're inside because of COVID, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so COVID, they put us on quarantine since March the 20th, and they had a very strict quarantine. Like, you can't, like, at first, only you could go out 2 days a week. You could only go to the bank, the hospital, or the grocery store, or the pharmacy. That was the only thing that was actually open. That was that way for 20 days, and then they kind of opened up some things, and you could go out. Still only two times a week, unless you had a just reason for going out, and you had to go out with a mask, and we're still wearing masks. And as of right now, they have opened up probably about 70% of the population to go back to work.
So not just COVID, but you're compounded by the Venezuelan refugees that have been streaming over the border because of the socialist paradise that was not the socialist paradise that Venezuela became. And so you're dealing with COVID and Venezuelan refugees and trying to already minister to very poor children in the streets. Tell me about what's this like when you're going out into the streets? Just tell us about that. And then I'm going to shift gears and talk about how you fund the ministry.
So throughout Medellin, there's parts of Medellin are very, very beautiful and very wealthy. But there's also parts that are not, kind of like running through any major town in America. But there's certain sections of the towns where there's a lot of prostitution, a lot of street children, a lot of street adults. And so a normal day, if you're going to go to work, most major intersections will have people on the side of the street either asking for a handout or I'll clean your windshield and then you give me a tip or I'll sell you some candy. So that's pretty common to see the impoverished work in the streets. However, because of COVID, now it's illegal for them to be standing on the side of the streets, but they're going to go outside so many days a week, which has actually hurt them. And on top of that, everyone's scared to hand money to them because they're scared they're going to get COVID. So they've been really abandoned. We've tried as a ministry to select certain people and try to help them every 15 days, give them food just so they won't be starving, and trying to help them. And then as a ministry, as a all in all, we go out in the streets. We know where the people are working, looking for girls that are pregnant living on the streets. And so we try to rescue them. And also, as well as we work with a ministry called Pro Life here in Medellin, that's right in front of a abortion clinic. And of the eight girls that went through our girls ministry, that had their babies through our program, seven of them were actually in line to abort their babies. So we get a lot of girls through there.
Now, you were telling me a lot about leadership yesterday and how, I mean, I'm surprised at how many awesome lessons of leadership we could cull in that 15, 20 minutes that we spent yesterday. You were telling me some time ago, not before we did the podcast, about the leadership network on the streets as you were going to minister. Tell the audience this.
Yeah, so we're still underneath the shadow of Pablo Escobar. You know, one man rules everything, and it's all ruled by power and authority and fear. And so
we're talking about the bad guys here, right? I mean, drug correct. Dealers, like legitimate, yeah. like what you think of when you think of drug dealers in Colombia in the movies.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Like you see the videos of narcos. Exactly like that. Sadly to say. However, that was the past. We're a lot safer, but there's areas that are still like that. The normal everyday life's not like that, but there's areas that still live like the program Narcos. But so I went at 6 o'clock in the morning to do a video to promote the girls' ministry. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, there's two young guys. They're drugged up playing games on the street. So I'm like, hey, can I do a video? And he says, oh, yeah, go ahead. I whip out the camera. There's two young people. I have a $3,000 camera.
So for clarity, the camera is so that supporters back in the United States can see what your ministry is, how you're ministering to children, helping sweet kids, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So okay. in that particular spot, we were going out once a week giving cheese sticks and warm drinks to the people. So they kind of knew us. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, go ahead and do the video. And as I'm setting up the camera, someone texts me on the shoulder, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm going to video them. You got to ask for permission. I did. I asked these two guys. I did. No, you got to ask the boss. And so then I said, where's your boss? Show me your boss. And then they walk over to this person. I said, we're the people that give free food at nights. Can we do a video so we can raise money for the people in the States? And he goes, oh, no, you got to ask for the boss. And then they show me another boss. They went through 7 filters. The last filter, I went in this really dark room with a plastic roof. There was tables set up with drugs on it and tables set up with money on it. I was like, this is just like a movie. And I was like, this is either going to go really good or really bad, you know? And so here we are. And they take me over to these two guys standing against the wall. They both were wearing polo shirts. They're both nicely dressed. Everything around is dirty, nasty. They got their guns. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm here. And I had this shirt that says in Spanish, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. And I told him, I said, you know, we come out, we get the free food at nights. We want to raise awareness to be able to help these people. He goes, okay. But before he said, okay, he looked at my shirt, like you read my shirt. And I felt like when he read my shirt, I was like, okay, now he knows whose authority I'm under. And he looked at me and he said, okay, I'll authorize you to do from here down and from here to the left, to the right. And if anyone asks you, just tell them Jonathan authorized it. And so that would go on the streets and I start feeling them. They're like, what are you doing? I was like, well, Jonathan authorized it. And so, but all those people, you know, the guy was there and had scars all over his face. As you could just tell, to get in that position of power, he had to fight for that power.
So when you said Jonathan authorized it, what was the reaction on the street?
Oh, they're just like, oh, yes. And they just kept quiet. Let me film. So it's interesting using somebody's bad name for power to get what you want. But
yeah. Well, so there's a couple things there. One, leadership works. Whether it's a negative type of leadership, which that hierarchy certainly was, but once you had that approval, I mean, nobody was going to challenge him. So there's kind of a negative leadership, but still you were working within that. But the broader lesson there that I see is that because you were already doing good in the neighborhood, working on relationships, you're helping and they could see that. Like if I just walked in there and they didn't know who I was from Adam's Cat, like, hey, I'm just going to come down and help for a week and then go back to the United States. It would be a very different story, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like I go in the most dangerous parts of Medellin, and I never go with fear because I know I'm going in the name of the Lord, I'm going to do something good. And as soon as they realize you're there to do something good, whether it's like we do health clinics in the neighborhoods, and so they, you know, it's kind of like you go to the kingpin in the neighborhood, I'm going to come in with 12 foreigners, we're going to do a health clinic right here, and they're like, oh, no problem. I'll tell everybody I sent you guys.
Yeah.
So it's like they win.
Yeah.
They win points. I've sent the doctors to help you guys.
That's interesting. But, okay, so tell us how you fund the ministry. I mean, like, so it's a normal missionary support generally?
So for years, it was normal missionary support. But when we started this girls' home, we had to figure out something different because, you know, people are just bombarded. Please help, $30 a month. And I wanted to give something to put in people's hands, right? So we have like coffee, and the girls paint the bags, and they would throw them back where the bags come from. So I had like a doctor, he'll buy 50 of these bags himself and then hand it out to all of his nurses as a gift for them. I have people in churches will buy 10 bags and they'll go out and sell it for us. But one bag, for every one bag, will sponsor one girl one day in the girls' home. So it's really been, at first, I wasn't even really a coffee drinker, to be honest. I wasn't a big coffee drinker. And I started, at first, we started selling like kind of generic coffee. And all my coffee gurus, like, you got to up the game, man. If we're going to pay good money for coffee, we want good coffee. So actually, the coffee actually won second place in all of Colombia. And it is a very good dark roast coffee. It's organic, so people just love it. And so a lot of people are like, I want to buy 5 bags just because I want to help you one time, right? But then after you taste the coffee, like, no, I want you to keep sending me 5 bags a month.
Now, and so now you sound like you've gone into selling coffee mode, but for listeners, I have asked him to explain what he did because this is brilliant. This is a way that there, you know, you can fund something that is of tangibly excellent value. You could go to Starbucks and fund a lot of causes that you might not agree with, or you can go and you can fund something that you know is helping street kids get off prostitution. And I mean, this is pretty incredible. So how do they, how do people find this? How do they get this? I mean, what's the connection?
Yeah. So I'm in the middle of building a website because it's really taken off, but for the most part, people just look me up on Facebook, Brian David Miller on Facebook, or they send me an email at Brian with an I, B-R-I-A-N at tministries.org.
T, and then the letter T, and ministries.org. T, yeah, ministries.
Yeah. And then I'll ship the coffee to them, which has been a really good. What I like about the coffee is, you know, the girls paint the bags. And so it's another way, too, this whole mentality of a lot of foundations. Just come here, girls. It's all free living. We'll just give you everything. But the girls know by them painting the bags, that's helping them to be in the home. So it's another way of them giving back.
That working thing that we talked about in the last episode, that's very good. That's there's some great synergy there. I did an episode on Mully. I don't know if you watched it or not, but Mully was this Kenyan businessman. And he decided to leave his business and just like go out and minister to street kids. And before long, he was ministering to so many that he had to move his house to a farm. And then he was trying to figure out how to farm to be self-sustainable. And he was providing now vegetables to the European Union. He just built. It was awesome. But that's exactly what should be happening. You're providing not only for them. There's something wrong about when you stifle creativity of human beings and you don't let them become what they should be, that you don't either allow their capital to be, their human capital to be raised, or you don't allow them to work, or that there's a dignity in that work. So, I mean, one thing feeds into the other, and I'm very impressed with what you're doing with that. What else do you want us to tell us about the coffee?
It's really good coffee. I love it. And I would encourage all you guys to try it. We're also doing coffee sales in churches. Like I have churches, the idea where you're talking about Starbucks, so they don't want to sponsor Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts. They order our coffee by 5-pound bags and they use it to serve Sunday mornings. But in coffee, you're more welcome to come to Colombia and we'll take you to the coffee farm and you can see the coffee roaster. And just totally, hey,
that'd be another great experience. Way of doing this. Some agritourism, right?
Yeah.
I think you should stay away from doing that with cocaine, though. That would be probably, I mean, you probably know some sources, but that's probably not a good idea. Okay. So, hey, listen, we got to wrap this up. And I am so grateful that you and I had a chance to talk about this and expose the audience to that. Brian, I'm really impressed with your leadership. As you talked about it in the last episode, all those things that you talked about, relationship or, you know, empowering and supporting or whatever else, and what you talked about in this episode, And, you know, when I was thinking through what we were going to talk about, what struck me was there's a quote by John Quincy Adams, sixth president of the United States. If your actions inspire others to dream more, to learn more, to do more, to become more, you're a leader. Brian, you're a leader. And you're doing a great job. And I wish you the best. I hope that everybody who hears this will look up Team Ministries. And if they're avid coffee drinkers, they'll think about supporting what you're doing here, because it's really important that they do.